You're listening to the Swim Out Podcast, a show about the wonderful world of outdoor swimming.
Hello, Hunter.
Hello, Vicky.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to season two of the Swim Out Podcast, where we'll be talking all about uncertainty and its impact on us all.
In today's episode, Vicky catches up with Jamie Monaghan, who spent much of 2020 swimming around her hometown, Manhattan.
We hear all about swimming in unfriendly tides.
They were swimming uphill. They were going against a treadmill. The big carpet was moving and they just couldn't swim fast enough to get through it. And no matter how hard they swim, the best they could do was stay still.
Plus the journey of uncertainty for Channel Hopefuls in Dover.
You see people come along, sometimes confident, sometimes scared, sometimes start confident and then become scared. And you see them literally grow in stature.
And we hear from you, our lovely listeners, about uncertainty and how it was for you.
My pool shut down and I had to train in my boss's backyard pool, which is only 15 meters. The pool lacked adequate lighting to swim early when it's dark, so I bought submergible LED light discs and formed a lane line at the bottom, like an airport runway.
Quick reminder to you all to give us some likes and some feedback, please, on all your podcast providers. Good ratings really lift our profile and will help more listeners and swimmers find out about our little podcast. So, Vicky, how's it been?
73 days of no swimming. It's been incredibly strange. And not podcasting. So I'm raring to get going.
Excellent. This is series two, obviously, so what have we got to look forward to? And I mean, are you excited about the journey up ahead?
I'm very excited about the journey up ahead. We've got loads of great topics and some fantastic guests. One of the episodes I'm really looking forward to is about voyages and journeys that people can go on with their swimming. There's an issue as well about the mind and how swimming can affect your mind. So yes, loads and loads.
Sounds good. So after 73 days of swimming abstinence, what was it like for you getting back in the water?
It was so lovely. And you know, the day that we were first allowed back in London, it was a glorious, glorious sunny day. It was just fantastic. And everybody at my reservoir was just smiling from ear to ear and squealing with delight, and possibly a little bit of squealing at the temperature.
Moving on to our first item, Jamie Monaghan, I guess, is not much of a temperature squealer, but she is an ice, winter and ultra marathon swimmer from New York who has enjoyed open water swimming on all seven continents. The current doyenne of the open water swimming scene and someone who found a compelling challenge for herself over this last year, swimming around Manhattan a number of times. Vicky, you caught up with her down the line from our home in Manhattan earlier.
I'm so excited to be here with you, Jamie. The queen, definitely the queen of swimming at the moment, excelling in two quite different disciplines. You know, the ice swimming and the long distances are different, and throwing in a bit of butterfly. And I'm so thrilled to speak to you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Vicky. It's a pleasure to be here and thanks for thinking of me.
Well, the theme today is uncertainty, but you don't seem to be a very uncertain person. But surely this last year has brought uncertainty.
For sure. Yeah, this has been a challenging year. I think we've been kind of on lockdown for 13 months now. Things are starting to open up. You know, we just had spring come this weekend. So I feel right now my tone is very optimistic. But I think this time last year, you know, were dire days. You know, we had refrigerated trucks in New York City lining the streets just because the morgues were filled up and the hospitals were filled. And, you know, definitely another, you know, challenging time here. And, you know, then it eventually for the whole world as well.
New York's very important to you, isn't it? You talk very passionately about New York. I was just wondering if you normally train in the Hudson, though.
I wish I could train in the Hudson every day. The current there is quite strong, and there's tons of large ships and, you know, vessels coming through. There's ferries, there's boat traffic. So it's not, it's not recommended that we train in the Hudson. But yeah, the nice thing is when I am swimming in a pool, my home pool is actually right on the water. It's on the edge of a pier that jets into the Hudson at Chelsea Piers. And there's glass windows that open up into the river. So when you see large ships come by, it almost looks like they're, you know, these huge ferry, you know, cruise ships. They look like they're almost right next door to the pool. So pretty amazing.
That's really exciting. That must be such a nice thing to look at. So where did you manage to train during lockdown?
I was doing minimal training. I was barely taking a walk outside until probably June timeframe. Not much swimming at all until about July of last year. Yeah.
And then you kind of just decided that you were just going to keep swimming round and round Manhattan. So can you tell us a little bit about those challenges that you did?
Yeah. And I mean, too, before last summer, I had done the Manhattan swim and lots of local swims. I had done Manhattan specifically about 11 times at that point. And absolutely, it's my favorite swim. And last summer, it was actually a unique opportunity because all of our boat pilots that are usually kept very busy by all the amazing international swimmers coming in to do this amazing swim, you know, that was completely shut down. And, you know, I felt ethical. It was a good thing to do. I thought personally, I just wanted to do something to make me feel strong, to celebrate New York City after some tough times, you know, kind of just embrace the summer and, you know, the uniqueness of this, you know, terrible and peculiar year, but try to make something good out of it. So
just tell the listeners and what you the two challenges that you actually did.
Yeah, so I did a bunch of single loops of Manhattan, but the two big challenges that I set up for the year, other than kind of doing a large number of loops, was the first challenge was 7 Manhattan loops in 7 days, and it's a 28.5-mile swim. It's very supported by the current. So for me, it kind of is between 7 and 9 hours in duration, depending on the day. It was definitely very grueling in terms of like not just the swimming, but kind of the packing, the kind of cleaning the gear after the night, cleaning me, you know, I'm wearing all this crazy sunscreen, you know, so kind of showering down after every day and, you know, soaking it all off, you know, was definitely something that was incorporated into every day for 7 days. And then just things like making sure work is, you know, I'm checking everything in work at the end of the day and making sure nutrition is good. You know, what do I have for breakfast? What am I feeding on during my swims? Dinner, sleep. So there's all those, you know, it's a multi-day event. So it's so much more than kind of like even the very long, you know, single swims that I've done. This was a totally different animal.
And then you did it, you went 4 times around just for fun at the end.
Just for fun at the end. Yeah, almost the end. That was another thing. We usually have, as I described, an immense amount of boat traffic here in Manhattan and in the New York City waters. But this year, especially in kind of June timeframe, there was really nothing much going on. The ferries were suspended. There wasn't much boat traffic at all. So it was kind of, usually we're kind of dodging cruise ships. We're waiting them to pass by. Once a couple of years ago, I had to wait for 45 minutes treading water for 2 really large cruise ships to go past us in the Hudson because you don't even want to get anywhere near those guys. It's crazy. This year with the UN being remote, we had the opportunity and we asked the Coast Guard, is this okay? Will we be able to do it? And, you know, it was just kind of a slam dunk current day, probably the best that we were able to leverage for years. And I was kind of like, it really only came into fruition after the 7 and 7 days because I was feeling so strong. And it's like, I think I probably could have done more back to back to back. Nobody has ever done a quadruple. Let me try for that. And we kind of got it all set up with the rotating boat crews, observers, pilots. Overall, it was just amazing kind of getting to see the sunrise twice, kind of swimming through 2 evenings and seeing the city skylights. So definitely really challenging to swim for 45 hours and, you know, 114 miles. But, you know, just making the most of that weekend. It was a very special weekend.
Sounds amazing. Actually, I was meant to be coming across to do that swim this year, but, you know, obviously I'm not. I just wanted to ask a little bit about your first post-lockdown swim, the Rose Pitanoff swim. Can you tell me about why that's important to New Yorkers and to you in particular?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think for the city and for myself, it's a one of those events that not many people have heard of. But once people learn of it, they're usually so excited because it's incredibly meaningful. We had a huge tragedy in New York City, and it was the largest loss of life before 9/11, where, you know, some, you know, young children and like parents were able to kind of go out for a pleasure cruise. And these people worked so hard. They lived in tenements. This was kind of just like the one bright spot in their day. And they took them out on the water and the steamboat caught on fire and nobody knew how to swim. So they all drowned. And, you know, absolutely tragic. But the silver lining was that after that, it had been kind of frowned on for women to learn how to swim. You know, you might see their ankles. It will be quite racy in terms of the costumes. But because they now knew it was a matter of survival, all these swimming organizations in particular for women sprung up. And Rose was part of that. She learned to swim. You know, she grew up competing, which was quite new. And, you know, I don't know that it was really done for women to compete and race, but she did. And she was just amazing.
What keeps you going? You know, you keep coming up with new stuff.
Making my own list is more important to me kind of than checking off other people's boxes. So, you know, I think it's good because my list is never ending. So, and I've got a list of things, you know, I want to do in terms of swimming, life things. So it really kind of informs everything that I do. And, you know, I think for me, the hardest part is just juggling and keeping things in balance, you know, as for everyone. I have a day job. I am not just a swimmer. I work as the head of recruitment, campus recruitment for an investment bank here in New York. So it's quite intense.
Mostly we've talked about your long distance swims today so far, but actually you're doing a lot of ice swimming. And I'm really interested in how those two types of swims compare for you.
Yeah, it's funny because you're always in the water, you're always supported by water, you're always working with the water. But in terms of the two different disciplines, for me, they're so different just in terms of maybe not what I'm doing physically. I'm doing front crawl most of the time, so the actions look the same, but just where I am mentally, and also probably the speed of things is very different. So with ice swimming, I'm totally focused. I'm really almost like not on edge, but incredibly aware and making sure that everything is going as it should. I'm really not thinking much more than my body, my breathing, what my crew is doing, and it kind of any things in the environment that could be, you know, affecting the swim. Whereas with marathon swimming, you know, especially you're doing these incredibly long swims, you might be focused on the scenery, you might have a song going through your head, you might see the crew doing something funny on the boat, or you kind of go into these spaces where you just get into a flow state and time passes very quickly. So, you know, you have the thoughts, they come into your head, you let them come. It kind of just everything can kind of come into your mind. It's very nebulous when you're marathon swimming as opposed to ice swimming.
Yeah, you said actually in an interview that I read, moments go slow and hours go quick. And
yep.
I think that's really beautiful because I think that's so true. Because when I stopped for my first feed on my channel swim, I couldn't believe that I did 2 hours before I fed. And I was like, seriously? So, yeah, time is kind of elastic, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very, I guess with ice swimming, it's like I could probably tell you every minute like where I am kind of on that. Whereas, you know, same thing like you said, too, I feed every 30 minutes. So it's probably less crazy that 30 minutes fly by. But, you know, 2 hours can disappear or, you know, it'll seem like back to back to back feeds. And, you know, it's just your impression of it. It's not what's actually happening, which is so funny.
You touched just then on, you know, the mental challenge. And do you have demons that come when you swim?
Probably like anybody, but they never come for too long. And, you know, I almost look at it like if you're feeling too good or if you're feeling really low, either way, you kind of have to just let it come and go because it's going to pass.
And music, you've talked about music being quite important to you. Which tracks are helpful for you?
I always get ribbed about my love for Taylor Swift, but she's got some great songs about New York City. She's got some really positive, you know, and I think she's just an inspiring woman herself. So, you know, kind of people like that. Like, I love Madonna. All these female singers really inspire me. And usually, you know, if I kind of hear these voices in my head, you know, in terms of a little song and things, that's always such a pleasant thing to kind of pass the time while swimming. Walking through a crowd, the village is aglow. Kaleidoscope of loud heartbeats under coats. Everybody here wanted something more. Searching for a sound we hadn't heard before. And it said, welcome to New York. It's been waiting for you. Welcome to New York. Welcome to New York. I used to really like the Kate and Anna McGarrigle had a song called The Swimming Song. And it's just like, in summer I go swimming. I often play that in my head. Drawing to the end now, back to uncertainty. Have you made any plans that you'll might have to change for this year, or are you just gonna keep going around Manhattan? Yeah, I'm gonna try to do something different this year, if at all possible. One of the things I have, and again, you know, permits permitting, life permitting, travel permitting, I have signed on to do an international relay of Lake Baikal in Russia. And you're probably familiar, but like, it's the biggest lake in the world. It's the deepest lake in the world, and also the oldest lake in the world. And I've never been there before, and it just looks absolutely incredible. Like, you know, the ice, the water in the summer, just, it's amazing. I'm really kind of conjuring that as a mental picture of something to look forward to. And the nice thing, not just the beautiful water and the people, being with swimmers and kind of doing something together, I think will be really special for me. You know, again, uncertainty, I don't want to build it up too much and be too disappointed if it doesn't happen. But in the meantime, it's something really nice to look forward to.
Taylor Swift ending that catch-up with Jamie Monahan from Manhattan. You can hear a longer version of that conversation on our website at swimout.net.
Mere mortals didn't manage to get so many swims in, and Dr. Nick Murch begins this taster of listener uncertainty.
My name's Nick Murch, and I'm a consultant in acute medicine in London. We're talking training about managing the knowns and the known unknowns, but there's also unknown unknowns that we need to manage with marathon swimming. As an acute medic, these are things that I try to think about and try to manage in my everyday work. There's some uncertainty that we have to deal with in marathon swimming and ultra marathon swimming, including the actual swim date, which is unknown in the English Channel or Geneva or North Channel, all of which swims I've done. What I've had to cancel this year has been 20 Bridges swim, which was planned for 2020 and has been postponed indefinitely currently. So it's important to focus on the things that we can control. So trying to do outdoor swimming when it was allowed, even though the pools weren't open during the first and second wave, water temperatures, so preparing for the worst where possible. And that's what we tried to do in medicine, is prepare for the worst that the COVID pandemic could throw at us. One of the things that medicine, but also marathon swimming, means is that you just have to get through the next X amount of time. So for me, it's 100 strokes. If I can get through the next 100 strokes, that's something that I can imagine. If I can get through the next couple of hours of work, that's something I can imagine. If you imagine trying to swim a huge body of water or manage a pandemic, it could be overwhelming to you.
Hi, my name is Craig Lewin. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts in the USA, and I am a swim coach for endurance swimming. Liquidtry.com is our site. And here's my story about uncertainty. Last year, I was scheduled to swim the English Channel. COVID was all over the place. Everything was shut down. I was training in all the neoprene you could find in the frigid Atlantic Ocean and my parents' pool. They have an outdoor pool. I swam tethered for 2 to 8 hours a day. July 4th, I had finished an 8-hour swim. It was my last big swim before my attempt. And I got home, and the Prime Minister of the UK had said Americans could go to England, which was amazing for me. I was so excited, but obviously we had to do a two-week quarantine. So that changed everything. Immediately, none of my crew could come with me. So I didn't know if I even had a crew. I didn't know if I could land in France. So I emailed the CSA and they said, you're clear to land in France. So I did a two-week no water quarantine. I only training I did was dry land training. Luckily, my dad was able to come with me. The weather worked out great and we had my chance. So at 6 a.m., riding out to Sanferho, and I started my attempt. And the easiest part of this journey was actually swimming the English Channel. I made it across successfully. And the biggest thing I learned was never give up hope and keep your eyes on your goals.
Hi, my name is Melanie Tyrrell. I live in Berkshire in the UK. 2020 was certainly a year of uncertainty for everyone. For me, it was meant to be the year of swimming the Gibraltar Strait and Jersey to France as a build-up and preparation for my English Channel solo in 2021. As the months in lockdown went on, I started to wonder how much training would be possible. My Gibraltar swim in September was looking less and less certain. Unfortunately, events conspired against me when I got to Jersey, having spent a week there and got as close as being kitted up ready to get on the boat, only for a thunderstorm to come over. I flew back to the UK, having not been able to swim. Obviously, I was very deflated, having trained and wanted a big swim. So with it being a year when many people had to postpone their swims and that knowing that some of the channel pilots had availability, I decided to contact my pilot. He came back to me and confirmed I could go on the next neap tide, which was the next week. And suffice to say, I was suddenly very motivated. I'm pleased to say that I made it to France. It was not without incident. I did manage to fall in the marina en route to the boat, destroying my hot water flask, drenching my clothes, had to be pulled out by two pilots. But I made it, and thankfully, the year that looked like nothing was going to be possible, I did manage to achieve a lifelong ambition.
Hi, I'm Rick Cipolla, and I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the USA. I've been training for about 4 years for an English Channel solo, which will take place later this year. All of us in the pool and wild swimming community around the world have been forced to deal with nerve-wracking uncertainty throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. My pool shut down for several months in early 2020, and I had to train in my boss's backyard pool, which is only 15 meters. My trainer, Gary Bruce in the UK, thought I would go crazy in such a small pool, but I didn't. The pool lacked adequate lighting to swim early when it's dark, so I bought submergible LED light discs and formed a lane line at the bottom, like an airport runway. Oklahoma's landlocked, and I couldn't travel to train in any ocean anyway, so I had to make the best of it. My pool reopened in the summer of 2020, but I know many of your listeners haven't been as fortunate and feel like they're behind in their swimming since the lockdown ended. Well, my trainer Gary says that one of the most important facets of training for the channel is learning to be comfortable being uncomfortable. We can all eventually make up for being physically behind in our swimming with hard work, but we all became stronger swimmers for having made it through the uncertainty of the lockdown and pandemic. So call me an optimist, but I truly believe that the uncertainty has led to our collective resiliency and made us all better swimmers as a result.
Thank you to Nick Murch, Craig Lewin, Melanie Tyrrell, and our favourite fan, Rick Cipolla.
Hunter, what uncertainty did you have?
I feel like I have uncertainty about swimming all the time, Vicky. In the last 2 years, I've been trying to do a swim up in the Highlands, in the Inner Hebrides of Scotland, and it just kind of keeps on getting pushed back and pushed back. And yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that this is going to be my year to finally crack this one, and then I'll be able to retire from my open water swimming career kind of a happy man. But how I deal with it is a difficult one, I think. Got to put it to the back of my mind. It's got to just exist there. If it's in the front, I know it's. I find it overwhelming uncertainty. So for me, it's all about not being distracted, I suppose. How have you been finding light relief in these uncertain times?
Well, you have to do some strange things, don't you, to keep yourself going along. So I heard about this little app and it's called Mercurius. And basically the idea was you had to book in for a show. It was an actual performance, and go into your bathroom, put your swimming costume on, your hat and your goggles. And then this show took you through this amazing immersive experience of being in your very own bath. But actually, it was lovely and I truly enjoyed it. So it was fantastic.
You're listening to the Swim Out podcast with Vicky and Hunter.
The last year has been very tough for those of us not lucky enough to live close to swimmable water. But one shining beacon of fun has been the webinars that have sprung up to entertain, educate and distract us.
One of my favourites was a course on staying safe in the sea, run by H2O Training and Immerse Hebrides. They also set up loads of one-off webinars, including one with Jamie.
The sea swimming course contained really useful information from Steve Bowens of H2O, who's based in Portreath in Cornwall. Also running these webinars is Norman MacLeod from Stornoway on the island of Lewis and the Outer Hebrides, an ex-sprinter for Scotland who now runs swimming holidays in the Hebrides.
The theme of today's episode is uncertainty, which must have been a big issue for you both during last year. Steve, how did it affect you?
Well, my work stopped, in essence. Like a lot of people, I run a lot of courses. I'm a lecturer in marine sport science and surf science in Newquay at Cornwall College. So obviously that's all face-to-face stuff. So that just stopped. And so it had been in my mind, wouldn't it be great to have something online which could a lot more people could access and learn from, not necessarily a qualification, but just kind of sharing of knowledge. We're all kind of creatures of the sea, and it's good to share and support one another. So it had been in there, but I just never really had the kick to get on and do it. And then was kind of forced into it.
And Norma, how was it for you?
I started Immerse Hebrides the year before, but I was still working part-time as a cardiac nurse, and that's what I thought I was going to continue doing. And then the swimming basically exploded just before lockdown. I had handed my notice in to my nursing job because I was just inundated and I had a full season ahead. So I was basically sitting at home jobless when lockdown happened.
So how did you get the idea to run the webinars?
Kind of started some training together with her team of guides. We put a program together because, like Norma said, she'd done lots of training with them. They'd done kind of the standard open water swim coach training. And then at the end of it, I think there was several people who, friends of Norma's and friends of her guides, who were like, well, I'd quite like to do that.
See, I'm just going to ask you a couple of sort of slightly more technical questions now. Somebody once asked me when I was training for the English Channel if I would be swimming uphill. Steve, can you give us a good answer to that?
The answer is possibly not in the sense, the initial sense that you would think of swimming uphill. If you think of the curvature of the earth, there isn't really an uphill because it's all round. You're going round it. So you're not uphill, I guess, is against gravity. You're not going against gravity. However, if you plan to swim at an angle into the tide so that you went in a straight line from point A to point B, then yeah, you'd be swimming uphill because actually you'd be swimming against the tide. The other option is you aim straight at point B on a compass heading 3 hours before the tide turns. And that way you go in a big circle. So you cover a greater distance over a ground, but you actually still only paddle the distance from A to B, if that makes sense, because the tide will take you one direction for 3 hours, it'll bring you back again for another 3 hours, and so long as you maintain a consistent speed and heading a sort of direction, then that will bring you back to where you need to be.
I also felt that your swimming course really helped me to grasp why the sea does strange things. I love that example about your friends trying to swim around the rock. Can you explain for the listener about the tide flow wind kind of?
So Portreath Village is a beautiful little village on the north coast of Cornwall. It's got a bay in it, and just off of the bay, there's a little island called Gull Rock. And these guys had been both really fit guys, but not not, I wouldn't say they were swimmers, but they'd set themselves the challenge to swim around this rock. Their time was 9 o'clock. It wasn't anything to do with the weather or the tide. That's the time that they were available that day. So they went down and it was a nice sunny day and they went out and they started swimming. And as soon as they got out of the bay, they kind of felt it was a bit choppy and it was a bit tricky, but they'd swum this distance before. They got around the island to the far side of it and they swam and swam and swam and they didn't go anywhere and they couldn't understand what was going on. In actual fact, the tide, contrary to popular belief, it doesn't come in and go out. The tide doesn't flow toward the land and away from the land again. It actually goes left to right. So when you swim out from a beach and there's an island and that island has tide going past it, that tide will be going to the right or to the left. They swam out when the tide was moving quite quickly and the tide was flooding. That means it was coming in. And when you think about it coming in along the north coast of Cornwall, that means it's going to the right. It's going up towards the Bristol Channel. They went round the island and went left. So when they came around the island, they were swimming towards Land's End, but the tide was moving quite quickly. So they were swimming a bit like your previous question, Vicky. They were swimming uphill. They were going against a treadmill. The big carpet was moving and they just couldn't swim fast enough to get through it. And no matter how hard they swim, they weren't, the best they could do was stay still. So eventually they came back with their tail between their legs and hopefully a better appreciation of the impact that tide has on when they're out on the water.
Yeah, and then a little old lady came over and just went round because she went the right way, I guess.
Yeah.
That does make me laugh sometimes because I'm sort of a little old lady, but...
Yeah.
An offshore wind, which sounds to me very dangerous, but actually it's... what does it actually do to the waves?
If it's a strong offshore wind, it'll be lovely and flat by the beach. But if you swim to a marker buoy, which is 100 metres offshore, by the time you get to that mark, it will actually be really quite rough, even though you can't see from the shore that it's rough out there. It will be probably worse when you go round the buoy and come back, because now you're swimming into the waves. And it's even worse in that it's not big ocean swell, it's short chop, which is very difficult, especially if you're swimming head up and you're getting lots of chop in your face. It's not very pleasant. At best, it's not particularly enjoyable to be swimming in that. And at worst, it might make it difficult to swim. So my advice would be, if you want to enjoy swimming in an offshore wind, there's no reason that I can really think of that if you're swimming, that an offshore wind is dangerous if you stay close to the shore. But there is, if you, your friend or your family goes on a kayak or a paddleboard to support you, they are at significant risk with an offshore wind.
When I came to the webinar, I really, really loved the props. And it's a shame that for radio that Steve can't get all his bottles of water and bowls of water and footballs and
elastic bands or resistance bands, I think they were.
There's been a few near incidents with those elastic bands, I have to say.
We did start out with a lollipop. Remember, the moon was a lollipop.
I did, and then I lost the lollipop, and I still haven't found it. It's somewhere stuck behind my desk, I think. God forbid, what state it's in now.
You have to improvise, though.
Yeah. You seem to have created an absolutely massive community. I just wondered how you plan to keep engaging with your national and international community.
I think swimming is a very personable topic and we all love to chat. Swimmers love to talk. So I think with lockdown, everybody's needed something to connect. You know, we've all needed to connect and, you know, there was no game plan here. It was just something that flowed naturally. I think when everybody goes back out into the world again, you know, we'll probably need some time to be out with people again. This is the way I see it. And maybe by autumn, winter time, we might come up with another plan.
Thanks, Norma and Steve. You can find out more about their webinars and courses from Immerse Hebrides and H2O Training websites. Links and longer versions are available. Emma France currently runs Dover Channel Training, a beacon which attracts Channel hopefuls, myself and Hunter, being just two of the class of 2019. It was a really key part of our training, giving us the chance to do so many of our long training swims and also bringing us in touch with other swimmers who helped us through the mental challenge.
Her day job until very recently was as a chartered management accountant in a FTSE top 10 company, AstraZeneca. In your spare time, you also work for the swimming company SwimQuest, and you are involved in your local swimming club, Guildford City. You've swum the Channel 3 times as a solo and 11 times in relays. Uncertainty is such a big part of Channel swimming. Vicky asked Emma, how do you help people prepare?
Uncertainty is with us in every way, and so many people turn up thinking that they're going to swim at 6 a.m. on the 7th of July, and they know exactly how it's going to pan out. And my job is to try and prepare them for the likely eventuality that that's not going to be the case. And we do that through training, through putting things that are not expected in the training programme. Longer hours, shorter hours, different conditions, different times of day, you know, whatever it might be, just to get people used to being comfortable being uncomfortable.
So you're very passionate about people preparing mentally. From you, I learned never to talk about my channel attempt, but only my crossing. And when people asked me how I felt, I was no longer to say that I was terrified, which I was, but had to transpose this into excited. It was really, really helpful. You know, that the challenge is 80% mental. Can you tell me a bit about your biggest mental challenge in your own swims?
Gosh, there are so many of them. I think the far away the biggest one for me was actually an unsuccessful swim, which was in Jersey. I was supposed to swim from Jersey to France and back again. And life got in the way. I uncovered a massive fear quite early on the swim and I aborted it. The challenge was that was only 3 weeks ahead of a channel solo attempt and I had to turn that around. I needed to go from the sort of terror I was in at that point to being able to start a solo successfully, knowing that if I was unsuccessful, that would lead to quite significant mental health issues. But the outcome was that I did get across the channel successfully at that time. So that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done.
And have you seen other people with big mental challenges and how have you helped them to get over them?
Every year you'll see people. And one of the things I like the most about training people in Dover is at the beginning of the season, you see people come along, sometimes confident, sometimes scared, sometimes start confident and then become scared. And you see them literally grow in stature as you build layer upon layer of confidence building opportunities until they go away and do their swim. They fly the nest, come back successful and a different person. That's such an amazing thing to witness. And it's trying to help people turn around what was a negative into a positive. So we have people come along who get out early from a swimming session and then they proceed to beat themselves up for doing it. And so it's trying to help them realise that that was possibly their biggest learning opportunity. And as a result of that swim that they thought was a failure, they've actually prepared themselves for the big day even more. And then they are more resilient, able to handle things that led to that decision on that day.
One of the things that was really, really important to me is just the community that is created and you're kind of the you know, it was for me, it's class of 2019, but there's a really wonderful community. And how did you manage to keep that going?
Yeah, we did. We had to be quite creative how to do that. You know, the first, I think it was 9 or 10 weeks of the season, we couldn't train because of lockdown. So what we did instead is we met virtually. So every Saturday morning we'd meet. There'd be some sort of swimming related challenge. Now, that was tricky. Some people had paddling pools they could get into. But for some, it was a shower or it was a bathtub or it was a jug of water pouring over their head. And then we'd just talk. And it was the ability to keep that connection that was really helpful to those people who joined us. And we've kept that since then because community is important. So we have a community call every single week now where people can join. And there's no agenda. It's just there to help people feel connected.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was that feeling that I was on a journey with other people. And I mean, most of the time that was wonderful. But then, you know, when I couldn't swim and other people were doing stuff and I couldn't do it, that was that kind of freaked me out a bit as well because, like, they're getting ahead of me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose it's like doing anything in a group, isn't it? You know, when it's all going well, it's really, really great to be part of that group and you can share and you can, you know, help each other along. But then if you feel like you're falling by the wayside, which I did when I was injured, I very much had that sense that I was falling behind, then it's more frightening.
It can be really frightening. And sometimes, though, when you feel like you are the only person who feels a certain way, and you, for whatever reason, maybe it's a one-day injury or whatever it might be, you can't train that day, and you stand on the beach and you see that other people are going through the same thing you were going through, but you had no idea.
We will have listeners who are booked to swim this year, and it's, you know, it's year two of uncertainty. What would you say to them now?
I would say this could be your finest hour. People last year were amazing. You know, some people made the right choice for them to defer the swim, and some people made the right choice for them to go ahead. And those that went ahead, they basically had to get out of their own way. By that, I mean, if there were barriers they were putting up, the fears they had to remove those to be able to swim successfully. And for some people looking at them, you would think that it had been any normal training year. Nothing seemed to baffle them at all. And the successes were still there. So I think what it takes is the ability to go, okay, well, that was my plan, and my plan I can't do anymore. There's nothing I can do about that. So what plan can I run with? And keep doing that until you have the successful plan that gets you across. Just have to keep stepping back from it and doing what you can do rather than focusing what you can't. Uncertainty is exactly what it says, isn't it? It's the not knowing. And embrace it, because actually some of the best things come from the unknown.
Thanks, Emma. And here's hoping that all swimmers with dreams this year find a way to make them come true. You can find Emma France at doverchanneltraining.com.
So next month we have a new presenter as Hunter's stepping up to become our editor. Fiona is an ex-colleague of mine from the BBC and helped us out in the last series. Welcome, Fiona. You're a keen swimmer, aren't you?
Yes, I am. One of those wild swimmers who grew up having to do it. You know, there was no such thing as swimming pools when I was little, or at least they were miles away. So we learned to swim in Loch Ness and the River Garry, the River Tarf, and they were all absolutely freezing. I just assumed that that's what swimming was about.
I think swimming in Scotland is particularly freezing, actually, Fiona. So next month, our subject's going to be the environment. So who are you going to catch up
with? I'm hopefully going to get out and about with Callum McLean. He's a fellow Highlander. In fact, I think you may have used him in episode one at some point. But he's a keen advocate of outdoor swimming and ice swimming, and has been for a very long time. But as well as the swimming side of things, he's also a keen environmentalist. And that's what we'll be discussing in the next episode, that and his ambassadorship of the Outdoor Swimming Society. So hope you've time to join us for that.
And I'm going to catch up with Owen Heyman, who talks about reservoirs and why we need to swim in them. So that's it from me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Let's catch up next month. Thank you.